Go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Right, nothing like a little love song anthem to kick it off. Late on a Tuesday night, let that bad boy play. All those divorcees out tonight, the kids are with the ex-husband. My God. Tuesday in Jacksonville. Pads on. And it was heated today. Everything except for the temperature. I mean, we actually got cloud cover. And it was nice out there. It was relaxing. Enjoyed watching day six of Camp Urban. Again, for the first time, pads on. A little bit of thumping today. I think that was one of the major questions that we had with everything, the way that the world has changed, including the NFL. And, you know, the early opinion on Urban Meyer is that he's running them. He's conditioning them. The up-tempo is there, I will say, with a tremendous amount of downtime. Water breaks, taking knees. That is the new NFL. And you have to do it that way. As we know, we lost a lot of people in high school and college and in the professional game because heat exhaustion and just whatever it was, you needed to regroup and educate. And this is anything but Camp Coughlin, trust me. This is anything but two-a-days where you're running gassers at the end of practice in full pads. It has changed. So we've seen that. And, you know, yesterday you look at comments, Robertson Harris coming out saying he thought he was in very good shape, football shape, what have you. But he's getting in better shape with each and every session out there on the practice field. We wanted to know, and we got an idea today, about how much popping would actually take place. Now, I didn't expect an Oklahoma drill. I didn't expect 11-on-11 full contact, tackling to the ground. That wasn't the case, but we got a little taste this afternoon. It really began with a Taylor Allen matchup. You know, the right tackle, Juwan Taylor, against Josh Allen. And, man, it just felt good. It really felt like football was back. So we're going to break it down here over the next couple of hours. We're going to go through everything that I was able to see. Again, I only have two eyes, and there's nearly 90 guys out there, so it can become difficult. But we're going to enjoy it here over the next couple of hours. All right, my name is Rick Ballew, out alongside R.J. Saunders. We go late on Tuesday. That's because of the Ladies of Helmets and Heels. And they just wrapped up. Me, O'Brien, now full-time. What a rotation that is. That's like Smoltz, Glavin, Maddox, and give me Steve Avery, okay? When you look at D. Murph, Brooksy, Taylor Dahl, and now me, O'Brien. Let me get this straight. That'd be a Yankee, a Red Sox, a Ray, and, of course, Dahl is a Cubby. So there you go. Those are the four. But it's always a pleasure to come in. You know why we get to push the envelope a little bit? Let's admit it. R.J. Saunders, the bosses aren't listening right now. They've called it a night. They're on the lazy boy. They got three fingers of something. I don't know. Maybe it's a scotch. Maybe it's an Irish whiskey. Maybe it's a bourbon. But we can get along with it deep here on Tuesday evening.
Oh, we get into a whole bunch of trouble on Tuesday nights. We like rocking on a late night. Play some of the Phillips Highway Stroll, and just get into it. I mean, overall, this is not for the faint of heart. For those of you guys who listen to us, 8 to 10, shout out to you guys. You guys are definitely part of the nightlife.
Hey, I learned something last night.
What's
okay,
up?
Okay, tomorrow night we'll be on it for Poker Room Radio, but Thursday our normal stomping grounds. We'll be at Mr. Chubby's Ponte Vedra. Friday we're going to Monty's.
Monty's.
Avondale.
Yes.
And I want to say it right now, Monty's will never be the same after Into the Night makes an appearance there, a party brought to you by Miller Lite. I'm carrying in my cell phone. Are you ready for this?
What's going on, Rick?
Two tickets, Jaguars, Browns. Okay. Oh, I mean, I'm going to need bodyguards. Okay, two tickets, Jaguars, Browns. And when you come by Friday night and you register, we'll pick a winner towards the end of the show, and then you can hopefully You know, win it and enjoy the game coming up 1 week from Saturday. Can you believe that we have football on Thursday night? We got Pittsburgh and Dallas 48 hours away. I mean, that is absolutely nuts. I cannot believe it. And it is here. We're going to talk a great deal about football tonight right here on Into the Night. All right, I tell you what I want to do tonight. I got quite a few things scheduled. Obviously, my observations after practice and what I was able to see today. But I want to give you an opportunity in this very first hour. We're going to hear from who are we going to hear from? Uche Wanare. We're going to talk with Uche Wanare coming up at 9 o'clock. Very outspoken on social media. And I remember interviewing Uche during his days here. But I'll be interested to talk with him. I think the offensive line around here has been pretty good. And, you know, we've only gotten one taste now in pads. But I've said it all along. If you look at a position group that has been considered really poor, it is that offensive line. Okay? And the fact that they all return, there's chemistry there, there's continuity there, there's camaraderie there. Can a dominant quarterback, a generational quarterback, in what appears to be now a balanced attack, if you really look at today's work, it's centered around running the football. And, you know, here I am 6 minutes into the show. I haven't even mentioned Trevor Lawrence. It was a very good day for Lawrence today. It was a bounce back day for Trevor, particularly the ability to throw the deep ball. He hit Marvin Jones Jr. today on a pass that we just never see that on those practice fields. And it was incredibly encouraging today. And I was blown away by Marvin Jones Jr. getting an opportunity to finally meet him one-on-one. You know, this is a little bit self-serving, but in the world of Zoom, and it's not a complaint because we were in the pandemic, and I guess we still are in a pandemic. But, you know, with Zoom, there's only so much you can do. And there's only so much you can tell. I learned an awful lot today about Marvin Jones Jr., how he is as a human being. I mean, he's incredibly pleasant, very smart. But he just came off to me as a guy who is going to be a phenomenal teammate. And it was last week when I mentioned that he stayed after practice and worked with Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, I told you a few years ago when I was with Leon Searcy and we were in Baltimore and Leon and I were having a cigar and a couple of drinks and it was outside on a porch in a steakhouse and Calais Campbell walked in with the rookie Josh Allen and that was teacher pupil. I don't know if they had a personal conversation, a professional combination, maybe it was both, but Calais was doing the talking and Josh Allen was a sponge. He was taking it all in. That's the way it was after practice last week, whatever day it was, when Trevor was working, you know, as the last guy on the field with Marvin Jones Jr. I heard some of what was said, but out of respect for everything, I'm not going to repeat it because I honestly don't know if I was supposed to have heard that. But it was Jones Jr. doing the talking, and it was Trevor Lawrence doing the listening. Marvin Jones Jr. is going to be a real good leader on this football team. And I tell you what, he has really found some seams and he's got soft hands. And, you know, that in itself to me is one of the great questions during training camp as we head towards the regular season. Who is going to lead this team in receiving? Marvin Jones Jr. today had a monster practice. DJ Chark was uncoverable today during one-on-one drills. Is that rain that I hear? Or is that an air conditioner?
That's the air conditioning.
All right. I just wanted to check. And, you know, Laviska Shenault is a guy who looks physically bigger, stronger. And he's a man who loves contact. And, you know, I think his route tree a year ago was incredibly disappointing. It was nothing but intermediate stuff, you know, in front of the linebackers, behind the line of scrimmage. And that's obviously going to be a big part of his repertoire. But he's also got the ability to go downfield. And I think with Daryl Bevell here and with Brian Schottenheimer, I would expect all of that to be part of what he is able to do. But the offensive line is kind of, You know, that's all. You know, but here you go, Blue. You were just bragging about Lawrence. You're bragging about the wide receiver core. Now, thanks. You ruined it. You mentioned the offensive line. The offensive line could be the biggest surprise on this football team. It really could. Now, they change offensive coordinators every year around here. That means you bring in a brand new offensive scheme. Daryl Bevel talked about that today. 6 installments so far for Trevor Lawrence. He'll learn his 7th tonight and take that with him to practice on Wednesday. But that offensive line is on its heels, particularly in the third quarter. I mean, this is a football team over the last 32 games, 2 years, that has averaged just over 8 points in the first half. You can't win when you do that. That's atrocious. Man, that is butt ugly. 8 points in the first half? I mean, are you kidding me? This team has been in a coma in the first quarter. Where'd they go? 18, 19 games without scoring a touchdown on their first drive? That's more than one full season. And they did it. And listen, they've had bad quarterback play. They have had bad play calling. Incredibly conservative. I mean, at least when you're losing 15 straight games, you would think you'd take some shots. You would think you'd take some chances. And, you know, the other side, if we sat here with Jay Gruden or we sat here with any one of these offensive coordinators that have gone through here, you know, going back to Jed Fish and Nate Hackett and Greg Olson, and, you know, the list just goes on and on and on. They probably tell you that, well, look what we've been working with. And, you know, one of the big knocks for or on Gardner Minshew is that he leaves the pocket way too soon. So how can you run a route like that if you're leaving the pocket too soon? I really do believe that that's going to change this year. There's going to be some imagination. There's going to be some balance. You're going to be in the stands or you're going to be on a bar stool and you're going to think there's no doubt they're running here and they pass. Or you're going to think there's no doubt they're passing here and maybe it's a screen pass as opposed to a long pass or maybe it's a draw, some sort of run. What I'm trying to get at is this offense, I don't care how many beers in you are. I mean, you can be 3 6-packs in. And you can be on edibles and or gummies or whatever they are. And you can look at the TV and say, well, I know exactly what they're going to do here. Okay? It's been so freaking predictable. I think that changes this year. I really do. And the offensive line could be the biggest surprise of it all. If Lawrence really is all that, the weapons he's got, it is noticeable so far. And if he can have short game, middle game, deep ball game, and you're able to run the football, pass the ball out of the backfield, and obviously ETN is uncoverable again today, just showing what I believe is fantastic speed, cutting ability. He's bigger than I thought. Meeting him yesterday, he's a good 215, 220-pound young man. And you add all that, James Robinson's faster. James Robinson, to me, still looks like the best ball carrier on this football team. And I know that Travis Etienne's first-round pick, and I know that Travis Etienne set the record for most rushing yards in the history of the Atlantic Coast Conference. I don't care. James Robinson looks like he is faster than he was 1 year ago. I really like what Dari Ogunbowale is doing. To me, he looked like the best running back today in pass protection, which absolutely James Robinson was the best in that a year ago. Remember last time at this year when I – do you remember that, RJ? And you know I'm never one to pat myself on the back. I am all about humble.
Right.
But do you remember when I tweeted out and I said in this show, don't be surprised if James Robinson – gets a ton of play at that point. Leonard Fournette was still on the team, and, you know, the COVID process was there for Rock Armstead. We didn't know, and I remember just getting destroyed by listeners. Boo, you don't know anything. Who in the hell is James Robinson? But the first thing I noticed with him was his blitz pickup or his ability to chip and help. And I thought Dari Ogunbowale has really picked up his game in that aspect today. So everything I'm saying centers around the fact that this offensive line could be the best hidden secret on this football team. It could also completely fall apart. I mean, I'm a realist. but I feel it is encouraging. They're off to a pretty good start. And, you know, the fact that they brought back George Warhop, I figured there's no way he'd return with Urban. I think spoke volumes about where they believe this offense can go. So, all right, I got a lot to do. I tell you what I want. Tell you what I want to do tonight. As always, you can get us on the text line, 641-1010. I want to grab some calls. We got a lot of guests scheduled. Uche Wanari at 9. We got a lot of guests scheduled tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. But I feel like I haven't gotten to Jaguar fans. It's such an incredible luxury here to have this text line, which I really enjoy. And obviously, you can do that, 641-1010. But you can also call in if you got a Jaguar question, that something that you're wondering. I'll do my best to answer. Again, I'm in each and every one of all six of these training camp practices, and there's a lot to look at. But if you got something that you feel you need to get out, right now is the time to do it. The number 641-1010, 641-1010. Great to have you with us. This is Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Phillips Highway Stroll. A little wet out there for the ladies. Take cover. Man, the news coming out of Indy, anything but good. Add Quentin Nelson to the list along with Carson Wentz. Yesterday, Frank Reich said it'd be 5 to 12 weeks for Carson Wentz, an identical surgery now for the incredibly talented left guard with the Colts, Quentin Nelson. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that I never wish injury on anyone, and I'm just not saying that publicly. I'll tell you the same thing privately. This is their livelihood. I don't care what the situation is. I mean, if a guy gets a bump or a bruise and he's out, you know, for a game, that's one thing, but to wish it upon someone, I think is evil. I just do. With that said, just a tiny bit of a contradiction, I don't think it's going to matter here for Jacksonville, where they are on the schedule for the Indianapolis Colts. It really doesn't matter, okay? I mean, 5 to 12 weeks, that is obviously a huge timeline. But if you look at the Jaguars' schedule, they don't get the Colts until, let me see here. They get Indianapolis. They go to Indy on November 14th. Jacksonville goes to Indy on November 14th, and then they play the season finale right here on January 9th. So, you know, 5 to 12 weeks. Here we are, what, August 3rd? Happy 50th, by the way, to my younger sister, Kristen Ballew, now Kristen Cianci. Yes, part of that same Buddy Cianci. Made family from Providence, Rhode Island. Just kidding. No, 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 no. Kidding. Not kidding. Although they did have a cat named Buddy until he got ate by a coyote or something. You can't let the cats out anymore. I mean, I bought kitties for mine. I bought kitties for my daughters, Crookshanks and Luna, and they're house cats. You can't let them outside.
Can't let house cats
I drove
outside.
Right in here. I pulled in, you know, I go through Publix and touched in just because that light there, I've seen seasons change at that
right.
light
yeah.
on Southside and Hogan.
Yes.
Also, don't tell anyone I told you this, but when you kind of roll in through Publix, every once in a while, there may be some yummy mummies walking around. I hate it when I'm so honest. I do. I just hate it. But I saw a cat. He was on the other side of the street, running on that little rotary untouched, and I'm like, damn, man, you need to get back home. Hopefully it's in one of those apartments or across the street, but you can't let cats out anymore. Now, we had a cat grow up in Boston by the name of Hootie. This thing took on coyotes, and it took on raccoons, and it was undefeated in the hood. It took on all the other cats, feral cats, street cats. Okay, stray cats, black cats, Siamese cats. Am I allowed to say Siamese cats anymore? Is that like part of the cancel culture? I honestly do not
know.
It's
the name of a cat, isn't
it? Hey, listen, I'm asking you. You're with it.
Well, I'm
you're hip, you're lit.
I'm trying to get my head around. There's coyotes in Boston.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was an LA thing. I promise to God, I thought that was an LA thing.
Bro, you
thought coyotes were only like on the West Coast.
No. They're there. You got bears. You got a lot of bobcats. Okay.
Okay.
See, around here you gotta watch yourself. You hit a ball into the rough, you hit a ball into the weeds. You got to deal with spitting cobras. You got to deal with black mambas. You got to deal with, all sorts of different types of rattlesnakes and water moccasins. You have to worry about that when you play golf in Massachusetts or New Hampshire or Maine, but you may be in your backswing and all of a sudden a black bear is going to roll up to the tee box.
Hey, that's the Bears golf course now messing with me. It's your golf course. Go ahead.
Anyway, I forget what I was doing. Don't turn to 50, you forget. But yeah, I just want to know if a Siamese, because honestly, if it is, I don't want to offend anyone. I wish my sister a happy birthday. She's 50 today. But that's, people always ask me, is that part of that connected family in Providence, Rhode Island? I'm like, no. No, not at all. As far as you know. All right, let's get to it. I want to make tonight party, I want to make this your opportunity to fire questions at me, okay? Both on the text line and with phone calls. It's the same number, 641-1010. Getting a lot of texts that are rolling in. I know I haven't taken calls in a very long time. I will tonight, 641-1010. Trevor Lawrence started a little bit slow today, all right? Threw an early interception. It was kind of an underneath pattern, and Joe Schobert made a play on it. Looked like it was some miscommunication. So, you know, after yesterday where he threw three picks, two of which were legit, you can make the case that the Shaq Griffin pick doesn't count because it was a defensive offsides on the play. After that, Lawrence really settled in. And it was a great practice today for Trevor Lawrence. And you know, I don't want to be too expressive here out of respect, although I have seen a couple of things have been written about the design of the route. We're told that we're not really supposed to discuss any of that. He threw underneath stuff. He threw deep balls today. One was dropped by Jalen Camp. But the pass that he made to Marvin Jones Jr. today down the right side would have been a long touchdown. And it, you know, any touchdown is going to get you to the feet and you're going to be high-fiving and you're going to be all excited. But I'm talking about the wow factor, okay? I mean, it was absolutely a bullet. And there was great coverage. I thought Tyson Campbell had a real good practice today. C.J. Henderson was spotted. Oh, by the way, he was working on the side. And he was right next to defensive backs coach Tim Walton today. So, you know, that's encouraging that you would think that when you're on the reserve COVID-19 list that you have to miss 10 practices, that it could have been so bad that, you know, he's not in the building. And we were told yesterday by defensive coordinator Joe Cullen, or actually it was yesterday by assistant head coach and inside linebackers coach Charlie Strong, that C.J. Henderson was, you know, part of all the meetings, but missing 10 practices, he's going to have a lot of catch-up that he is going to have to do. Honestly, when he said that, I didn't know just because he was part of the meetings, was he in the room? Was he doing things along those lines, or was it something that he was doing, you know, through Zoom because of COVID and because of contact? But seeing him out on the field today is a positive sign, and, you know, you get it tomorrow. I believe they're off Thursday. I haven't heard officially. Then you have practice that is open to the fans on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, including the scrimmage on Sunday. We're going to broadcast live on Sunday. For Andrew Buscelli, Loggeman, and yours truly back on the sideline. So we'll get our little preseason rehearsal in Sunday morning, 9:45 to 11:45
during that Sunday morning scrimmage. That is the last one that is available for you, Jaguar fans. I was happy to see that today with C.J. Henderson. But yeah, Tyson Campbell, thought he had a real good day today. And, you know, Georgia fans will tell you that he's not a great cover defensive back. He loves the physicality. He loves that side of it. But as far as coverage skills, lacking a little bit. I know that there were a lot of Georgia fans out there that were surprised that he was the first pick in the second round. But it was a great day for Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, it wasn't perfect. And I don't think that you can expect it to be perfect. But it was definitely a good day for him. And it was something, you know, after a bad beginning on Monday, he certainly did respond. 28-35 says, Ballou, how are the Jags going to stop the run? Is this Dan Fouts, Don Coryell situation? No. No, it is not. And I even think Chuck Muncy rushed for over 1,000 yards during that air attack that Fouts had with, John Jefferson and Kellen Winslow and who's the Hall of Famer? The other guy, I can't even think of his name right now. My goodness. Anyway, it'll come to me. But that prolific offense, yeah, they gave up a lot of points as well on defense. No. I feel really good about this run defense. Tell you what, I thought Devon Hamilton today, as soon as they went after it one-on-one, Devon Hamilton to me looked like he has added a great deal of strength. He pushed back Brandon Linder, and that happens when an offensive lineman is charging, a defensive lineman is charging an offensive line. I thought Linder held his own, but he was certainly driven back a little bit. So I was very impressed with what I saw today with Devon Hamilton. Malcolm Brown looks to be in really good shape. And, you know, he's a young man who's won a Super Bowl in New England. He's up against it now contractually. He's got an opportunity to get the bag if he has a big year. I mean, a monster season for Malcolm Brown, and he is going to be set for the remainder of his life. If not, and it goes away, if this becomes a Timmy Jernigan situation, you know, he could be out of the league, but Timmy Jernigan was not in good shape. He was in terrible shape. Malcolm Brown, to me, appears to really have it going. Certainly, Robertson Harris is going to be able to help out. You know, Jahard Ward is a guy that I think is battling Ke'Lavon Chase on right now. There seems to be an awful lot of hype on Ward, okay? He is yet to reach his potential. But the fact that Joe Cullen, you know, pounded the table and told Urban Meyer, you got to get this guy. I love his personality. I love his attitude. He's got a little bit of nastiness on that defensive line. The bottom line, though, is he's got to be productive. He's got to get to the quarterback. And I also think that he's a guy that can do more than just that. I think he can, you know, stand solid and set the edge on the defensive line. And, you know, where is he going to be? Is he going to be a big end? Is he going to be an outside linebacker? Again, I will not at this particular time with your questions, whether it's on the phone at 641-1010 or on a text line at 641-1010, I'm not going to get into position or depth chart because that has not been released by the Jags. You want to call me a company man? Fine, I'll handle it. But I'm not going to blow my deal by telling you that this guy is working on the first team and this guy is working exclusively at this position. I'm just not going to do it. You'll get it when you get it. That's out of respect for them. I hope you understand, but I know that not all of you out there will. All right, when I come back, let's get to it. Rapid fire, 641-1010. Okay, getting a lot on the text line. Again, we'll take phone calls as well, 641-1010. Jaguar questions that you have, let's do it. Former Jag Uche Nwaneri standing by. He's going to join us, and he'll go into the night at 9 o'clock.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, as I said, with pads on today, it really began with Taylor against Allen. Allen looks like a beast. But he's always looked like a beast. He's got to stay healthy, and he needs more help. Now, the last question I took was, is this going to be Dan Faltaire, Coryell? How are they going to defend the run? I think Jacksonville is going to be much better defending the run. My biggest question on the defense is, are they going to be able to get to the quarterback? Kalyvon Chaisson has been making some headlines. Apparently, he has been responding to some stuff on social media. You know, he was thrown to the ground yesterday by Walker Little. Some of the adjectives, I guess, or whatever, used to describe his performance was not enlightening. Thought he had a good day today. Okay, now, first rep, he got stonewalled by Walker Little. And I'm telling you, I sat there with Big Leon and watched it. Leon Searcy, our colleague here at 1010 and 92.5 FM. Leon was giving me kind of the technique look and what he does well. And Leon came away very impressed. But I like what I see here with Walker Little. It looks like he does have that mean streak. He looks like he's going to be a guy that can be a real leader of this offensive line. Eventually, to this point, Cam Robinson hasn't done anything to lose that job. And I said that, you know, Juwan Taylor had a good day. I just don't believe that you can expect Walker Little, a guy who's played one game in 2 years, to be ready in mid-September to be a starter at Houston. No. I say no. Will I be surprised if he gets that opportunity sometime in October? I think that's probably the timeline. You know, I think that you're looking at two rookie starters. You're looking at Trevor Lawrence, and you're looking at Andre Sisco, who I just love watching. Man, he is all over the football field, okay? I mean, I'm not going to Ed Reed you. I'm not going to put him in Canton yet, okay? He's got to stay healthy, but he appears to be back from the torn ACL, and he looks like a bona fide playmaker. Very excited so far about Andre Sisco. I think those are your two starters, and obviously ETN, whether he's considered a starter or not, is going to be absolutely involved with this football team. But it'll be a little bit of a holdout, you know, as far as when Walker Little gets his opportunity, in my opinion. But Chaisson was able to beat Cam one time, I thought, going inside. Also was able to beat Walker Little on an outside move. So, you know, I know everyone seems to have an opinion right now on the first rounders from a year ago, whether it be C.J. Henderson or Kalyvon Chaisson, and they're not good. Don't give up on Chaisson. And, you know, I guess I can say this. As soon as they went into team drills, Chaisson crashed down to the middle of the line of scrimmage and made a terrific tackle. Now, again, they're not taking guys and tackling them to the ground. That is not permitted during Jaguars practice. But his reaction, his football instincts on that particular play was outstanding. So I'm not giving up on Kalyvon Chaisson. 88-58, Blue, how has Colin Johnson looked? Is he running with the first string, second string? Are they using him in the red zone? Thanks for your time. Again, I can't tell you about where he is on the depth chart. Absolutely, he's a part of things in the red zone, but I haven't seen an awful lot of that. I think my opinion so far on Colin Johnson is that I've been a little bit disappointed. I haven't seen the growth and him take that next step. I was one of those who felt that in the perfect world, Colin Johnson would be the number four guy. You have the three, and they're interchangeable. And again, you know, you can ask anyone right now who's the top wide receiver going to be this year on the Jaguars?
Marvin Jones.
Okay. If I ask the next guy, he may tell me DJ Chark. I ask the next guy, he may tell me LaVisca Chenault. What we know is those are the top three. Those three went with Trevor Lawrence to Clemson to work out. I was hoping Colin Johnson with that 6'6 frame would absolutely be the number four guy. My guess right now is that it would be Philip Dorsett, who had a very good mini camp in OTA. He has not been as spectacular, in my opinion, so far in training camp. the two wide receivers that have really turned my head outside of the three starters are Laquon Treadwell. I mean, he's given you everything. He could still move. He's got nice hands. He's got a big body. He showed the ability to separate. And Jalen Camp. Now, Camp had a big drop today on a long ball from Lawrence. You know, it's the deepest position group on this football team. You know, they're going to cut a couple of good players. Josh Hammond made some really nice plays the other day. You know, he's been out now for a couple of days. Josh Emoto-Bebe, he's been out for a couple of days, but he's made some plays. So this is a deep group. And, you know, there's 16 guys you can put on the practice squad, so they'll try to cover them up. They might try to cover up Jalen Camp. I don't think you can cover up Colin Johnson at 6'6". You got to make a decision whether he's part of your team or he's not. Because I think if you put him on the practice squad, he'll be snatched up by another team. Again, the way the practice squad rules work, you can put a player there, but another team can come and get him if they put him on the 53-man roster. That's the only way you can go and put guys on the squad. Thank you for that. That was a good question. 45-53, below. I don't trust the twin turnstiles at tackle. Just scared by the past. Those two, I hope I'm wrong. We all hope that you're wrong. And again, this whole scenario right here could implode, or it could be the biggest surprise on the football team. For starters, when I look at Taylor, he can't have those stupid false starts this year. The Jaguars are consistently among the most penalized teams in the NFL. And some of the penalties are warranted. Penalties are going to happen. But penalties on the offensive line are bogus. Okay? Got to come together as a group. You're talking about a lot of career starts now with this five. I think a lot of the reason why people consider them twin turnstiles, again, is the setting with this team. Kind of lost in everything. They were a pretty good blocking unit last year. I mean, in 14 games, James Robinson ran for 1,070 yards where there was very little concern about the Jaguars' pass offense. I mean, defensive coordinators across the league, once they learned a little bit about James Robinson, their game plan had to sound like this. Our primary responsibility is to stop the run. Don't let James Robinson run at us. And yet, they open up some holes. So I think they're a pretty good run-blocking unit. And, you know, now you got a home run hitter along with Robinson and a veteran in Carl Hyde. So maybe they are able to run the football. And, again, if you're able to do that, if you're able to put together some drives, you know, double-digit drives, take some clock and be in a game. Instead of being down before you know it by a touchdown, you go to the halftime break and you're down by 10 or whatever. Again, I say it all the time. They average only just over eight points a game over the last 2 years in the first half. Of course, the offensive line is going to be in turnstile mode because defenses in the second half know that the Jaguars are only going to pass the football. So they're going to be pinning back their ears and going after whoever the quarterback was that particular week. You have to consider that. So a balanced attack, a great game plan, weapons, and a generational quarterback, if all that comes to fruition, the offensive line has a chance to get that much better because of it. Again, this could be the biggest hidden secret on this football team. I know your opinion on the offensive line. I listen to you as Jaguar fans. I try to respond to all of you. Sometimes it's impossible because I get so many. But I know the reputation of this line. I'm here to tell you it could be a secret. It could also totally implode. Totally. But I'm trying to put a little bit of a positive spin on it. Thank you for that. We have time for one more? Yeah, We got time for one more. Kidding us? Yeah. 89-31 Blue. How are the Jags going to use Travis Etienne and James Robinson? Will it be like Taylor MJD combo back? Does Robinson get the bulk of the carries, or does Etienne? Kind of a mixed bag right now. If you were to ask the local media, I think you get about 50-50 on that. I happen to believe that James Robinson's going to be the bell cow. James Robinson looks faster to me. James Robinson today showcased once again soft hands. What James Robinson is not is a home run hitter. You know, you get James Robinson out into open space, he's going to get tackled. You get Travis Etienne out in open space, he's a nightmare. He's going to make people miss, and he's got the ability to take, you know, a short little out and turn it up for a touchdown. So, you know, what I hope we see are offensive game plans where, you know, it's Trevor Lawrence out of the shotgun or Trevor Lawrence under center and James Robinson as your one back, and Travis Etienne is on the field. And, you know, maybe he's in a slot, or maybe they take the tight end out and they're in four wide receiver sets. I mean, can you imagine what this offense would look like if you did have a scenario where, you know, it's Chark, Chenault on one side, it's Etienne and Jones Jr. on the other side with Robinson behind Lawrence? I mean, to me, that sounds pretty damn enticing. Again, I can't get into scheme. I can't get into what they have done so far. But I love that equation, if in fact that does become part of what they do, getting both on the field at the same time. I'll wrap it up with this, then we'll bring on Uche Nwoneri, then we'll get back to you and your thoughts on the Jaguars at 641-1010, your questions on the Jaguars. I get asked all the time, is Lawrence going to throw for 4,000 yards? Is Lawrence going to throw for 25 touchdowns? Is Lawrence going to do? And my answer is always, well, 4,000 yards, I kind of hope he doesn't. And the reason why is I want the rushing numbers to go up. Urban Meyer has always been a man who's loved to run the football. That was primarily what they did today. Today was a running day. Today was a, not special teams, you know what the term is for Urban Meyer? Special forces.
Ooh.
All right.
Giving nicknames to these guys?
We learned that today. It is not the special teams in Jacksonville. It is special forces. So he's put a huge emphasis on the special forces. Punt, punt return, kick, kick return. Okay? Now the four core. I mean, you add all that up, and honestly, I mean, there's a real chance here. And I would just, you know, I would rather have Trevor Lawrence throw for 3,400 yards, but have the offense, you know, have James Robinson go north of 1,000 and have Travis Etienne pick up 600, 700 on the ground and Carlos Hyde pick up a couple hundred, you know, with some fresh legs, maybe late in the game. Do you understand where I'm going? And, you know, you look at the numbers last year, it was disgusting. It was like 616 passes and just over 300 rushes. You go back to the AFC Championship game, they were dead 50%. 527 passes, 527 rushes. If you do that again this year, then Trevor Lawrence throwing for 4,000 yards, no. Okay? And if he does throw for 4,000 yards, my guess is Jacksonville, once again, is trailing in a lot of these games. And he's forced to only throw the football in the second half. And, you know, he compiles yardage, but it's when the Jaguars are trailing. I hope that makes sense to you. It should. Uche Nwoneri, former Jaguar, goes into the night with Rick Ballew next.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, you know when RJ starts playing this, we're going clubbing. in 1 hour. Tuesday night clubbing.
Well, I play it because, you know, it says, like, through the late night, we're into the night. So I try to, you know, keep the theme going.
Yeah, we're late on Tuesday nights. Hey, Thursday night, Mr. Chubby's, Pontevedra, 6 to 8, 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite. $3 Wells, $3 wines, and a Miller Lite party coming up Friday at Monte, 6 to 8. And I have two tickets that you can register to win for the Jaguars opener. Can you believe they have a game coming up a week from Saturday? It's amazing. Browns in town. We actually have football on Thursday night with the Steelers and the Cowboys live from Canton, Ohio. It's the Hall of Fame game. Uche Nwabara. Always enjoyed conversations with him back in the day. Of course, played guard here for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We head to Atlanta to talk with the former Jaguars guard. He goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Uche, how you been?
Rick, what's going on, man? I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing really good. Yeah, I'm really excited about where this football team is. But, you know, right out of the gate, you were always very accessible to the media. And, you know, that I feel like that's kind of getting away from some of these players. And with the pandemic, you know, last year we had Zoom. The days of going into the locker room, you know, three times a week and then after the game, they could be done. Would you have liked it that way if that was what going on, you know, back when you were playing?
Oh, no, of course not. I mean, you know, there's a lot that is important about being able to physically stand in front of somebody and speak to them and have a conversation. And, you know, that's important in trying to get across the tone of your words and what your words actually represent. When you're being interviewed by somebody. So, you know, as an athlete in the locker room, it's a vital part of the experience. It's a vital part of us allowing us to be comfortable with the local media, with the beat writers, with people that we'll see for the most part on a weekly basis in the city. So can't imagine that I would like it. I don't think the players would likely favor doing things digitally rather than having face-to-face conversations. I think everybody kind of enjoys that element of it in regards to just being able to have that little experience with people who are in the media.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Interesting. And, you know, I've heard different thoughts on that, but I know that it seemed like you respected it and maybe even enjoyed it back during your playing days. And I hope we get back to that, but right now, who knows what is going to happen. All right, Uche, you know, a lot of conversation here about this offensive line. It's all back. They have a lot of career starts. I'm making the point that I think this could be the biggest surprise on this football team because of the quarterback, because of the added weapons, and, you know, let's face it, better game in-game play calling, you know, more balance. If all of that can come in, you know, into play, do you agree that this offensive line can take a step?
Well, you know, you got a line that has guys that have a lot of experience. You got AJ Can. He's a guy who has a lot of experience at my right guard position. And, you know, you got Linders in the middle, center spot. And these guys have gotten a number of starts under their belts. So I wouldn't say that personally, I wouldn't see it as a surprise if you saw that line come together and play with a lot of great chemistry. And just watch them gel. This is what offensive linemen do. So, you know, as long as their instruction and the scheme are the kind of schemes that play to their strengths, then you'll see the best that they have to offer. But again, you got to also understand that this is a team that's kind of revitalized itself with, you know, Urban Meyer as the head coach with the Trevor Lawrence era beginning. There is actually a lot that can go wrong throughout this situation as well. So I think that one of the things that you want to build with, that you want to have as your foundation for this kind of, you know, new look for Jacksonville with the young quarterback back there, is you want to lean on your offensive line and lean on what your line does well to keep him, to limit the exposure that your quarterback will have to exotic looks, like different kinds of blitzes, things that aren't necessarily rep so much in practice. You want to be able to keep that, keep those things from, you know, being a monkey wrench in the game plan for a young quarterback.
You know, I mean, we're talking with Uche Nwoneri. He's our guest, former Jaguars guard here, obviously, years 2007 through 2013. I mean, I go back to covering this team when they came into existence. And, you know, I remember that offensive line. You had guys like my colleague Leon Searcy and Dave Wydell, Tony Baselli, Ben Coleman, just guys that were outspoken but also showed some nastiness and were team leaders. I feel like that's been lacking with this bunch the last couple of years. How have you read this offensive line?
Very inconsistent, I would say. But really that boils down to that there's a number of different variables that can play into why they're inconsistent. For me, I look at some of the games over the past years, and a lot of times, you know, I think, and this is an offensive lineman speaking, but I think that there's a lot of more emphasis put on, you know, passing the ball and getting it downfield. And, you know, an offensive lineman likes to kind of go through a certain phases throughout the game where you can kind of build into getting yourself into a zone. And a lot of times that starts with the run game, physical contact, being able to get their hands on somebody, moving forward, driving their feet, working together. Those kinds of things allow for linemen to feel more confident when they're in passing situations.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they have, you know, presented a number of different looks in the run game to a defensive line and pass setting. You know, you can still have elements of the run game to keep and suppress a pass rush with play actions, with three-step drops, things that allow your offensive linemen to act as if they're run blocking and then sit down on the defender and settle into a pass set. Those are things that keep defensive linemen on their toes. Those are things that you can catch them off guard with. And, you know, I see the NFL has become a passing league, and I think that that's where when you don't have lines that are built for just passing the ball, then you can find that they will be sporadic when they're just put into passing situations where there's really no warm-up into that. And that's really – that's something that Jacksonville has kind of been a victim of for a while, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's a great point because, you know, you look at James Robinson, undrafted. The offensive line did a nice job last year when it came to run blocking, you know, over 1,000 yards in 14 games. But Uche, you know, they're trailing, and then all of a sudden they become one-dimensional. I don't care how good you are on that offensive line. When defenses know that they're going to pass, it becomes that much harder to try to do your job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I've been in a couple of those situations where you know, I can remember back we played in Atlanta. I think it was a Sunday night game or something like that. And you're down big. And for an entire quarter, we went 2 minute. Well, defensive line knows that there's nothing that we can do except pass the ball, nothing that we will do except pass the ball. So they pin their ears back. And that's the hardest scenario for an offensive lineman to ever exist in, because playing offensive line and pass setting is not a natural motion that the human body is made for. So we're moving backwards, trying to stop, you know, a very athletic defender from coming forward at us and getting past us. So those are scenarios that Jacksonville has unfortunately had to deal with far too often. But I think, again, if there's a balance in play calling, if there's a inclination to call plays that work to the strengths of not only your star players but also your line, give them the ability to tee off at some point on the defenders, but also put them in good positions with pass plays that make sense for them. Then you can see a team slowly begin to grow through the course of the season.
Uche, what did you make of the hire of Urban Meyer? What was your initial reaction, and has it changed at all based on what you've been able to uncover to this point?
This will probably be, and there are probably a number of people in Duval that know my opinion on the situation. I didn't like the hire. I thought that this was a sexy hire to make, and those are the ones that usually are boom or bust. And having been through a situation where I had a first-time NFL head coach coaching me, I saw how that played out when they didn't have all of the nuances of just the coaching dynamic at the top as the head coach. And, you know, when I'm speaking of that, I'm speaking of Gus Bradley, who's a great guy,
mm-hmm.
a great motivator, but not necessarily in line with understanding how to get the best out of his staff and to allow that to trickle down to the players. So, I've had my experience with that. And we've also seen the experiences in the past with coaches coming from the college level to the professional level. I think that one of the most important things when you're making that hire is to take into account what kind of staffing tree does this coach come from? Because in the NFL, that is something that a lot of people who really truly understand football, those are things that you can kind of track success through that. You look at the Bill Parcells tree, you look at the Bill Belichick tree, two opposite styles, but also two different results when their staff goes off and plays at different or goes off and head coaches at different teams. So, that's something that you kind of take a look at and you wonder what kind of hires they're going to make on the staff. And I think that we've seen that there's been some juggling around of the staff with Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shows that there is going to be a very steep learning curve for him at the professional level, because you got to have guys on your staff who know football.
Right.
And, my personal opinion, having worked as a consultant with collegiate coaches, I didn't come across many that I thought really understood football from a professional standpoint. So for me, that's where I kind of think about, okay, coaches are going to go get their guys. They're going to get their friends, the guys that they know well, that they're comfortable with, to come in and be a part of their staff. I know our coordinator is a coordinator who has a lot of NFL experiences, but has been in the college ranks for the past few years. So, I have my feelings. Those are just my opinions. I don't expect everybody to agree with it, but I've seen this play out before. So I'm just hoping that there is something different about this time with how Urban Meyer sets his staff up and how he operates the franchise. Because this is not like college football in any way.
No, it is certainly not. I think that's an intriguing point that you deliver. And to me, it is going to be very interesting to see how he allows Daryl Bevel and Brian Schottenheimer to run this offense and Joe Cullen to turn around and run this defense.
Now, that's one guy that I think was the best hire he made, Joe Cullen, who was a coach when I was in Jacksonville.
Right.
Shout out Coach Cullen's. He's a great energy guy, very intense, but he knows a lot about the game as well because he's been in the NFL coaching that position for a long time and coaching originally the defensive line, but now the defense coordinator. So he has an understanding about that.
Mm-hmm. He brought in some free agents. As we wrap things up here with Uche Nwaneri, he brought in some free agents that have shown me that they're leaders, and that's been lacking on this team. I mean, conversation today with Marvin Jones Jr., I was just blown away by that young man. And, yesterday or earlier in the week, I guess it was late last week, it gets during training camp, Shaq Griffin, I got the same feeling from him as a defensive free agent. We know they lost 15 straight, but how big of an issue has that been, the lack of leadership on this football team?
That's huge. And again, I think that you have to break this thing down into compartments, because it's not, when you talk about leadership in the locker room, there's an angle there for you to find a way to enrich the players. But also there's leaders off the field, there's leaders on the field itself. And then you have to have a coaching staff that also has kind of a pecking order amongst the position coaches, where there can be coaches who know when to motivate their guys a little bit extra, or there can be a time when coaches are able to step back and allow players to handle themselves on the field. And I really think that over the years, you've seen, marquee names that have been those guys for Jacksonville. For me, obviously, I look at, Fred Taylor, Dave Garrard, Maurice Jones-Drew, Darryl Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Brad Meester. You know what I mean? I look at those guys who were leaders in their own right, were different, and sometimes their role played out in different portions of the game or different parts of the season, where they were instrumental to getting us to be able to focus and get back on track and get a win after taking a tough loss, or put together a string of wins, like we did back when, what was that, 2009, 2010 season, I believe it was, the 2010 season.
Right.
But, you know, it's important to have leaders. And I think that that's really, it's not a singular thing. It's a multiple, multifaceted aspect of football culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, building the good football culture is the only way to be in position to win and to win big the way that Jacksonville wants to.
All right, last question for you, Uche. And I realize that the game has changed in the 11 years since this happened. But when you were firmly entrenched as a starter, the Jaguars select Blaine Gabbert. And I'm going to get crushed here by listeners from comparing Gabbert to Lawrence. But what was it like then? When a first rounder, a top 10 pick, walks into the locker room and you know he's the go-to guy, compared to what you think it's like now with the top pick overall, Trevor Lawrence walking into this locker room?
Just from a basic perspective, I don't think it's any different. I think that when you have a young top five player come in, there's a lot of hype, obviously. There's a lot of attention around that. But at the same time, you know, on a team of veterans, there is still going to be a dynamic or a balance that's found because they understand that they have to respect the fact that this guy's come in and he's expected to do a lot. So you show him your support. You show him that you got his back. But also at the same time, you know, you try and kind of help him along the way in building his confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the differences, obviously, with Blaine and Trevor is Blaine was in a very different situation than Trevor is in right now. Blaine was in a situation when he came into the league where you had a coach who was essentially acting as a lame duck coach. And you had a team that was about to be sold. So it was a lame duck team to a certain extent. And, you know, what a lot of people don't know, his quarterback's coach was never a quarterback's coach before that season. So mm-hmm. He was being coached. He was being groomed by people who were not, who really had no investment in him. They had no, their investment was limited because they were assumed to be heading out the door. And he was the youngest player in the NFL at the time. So this is a guy who came out young, who came out as a young player. And you know, that can really, having those kinds of variables around you can affect the final product, can affect the player's confidence early on in their career. And that's a critical time to build good confidence. And again, you know, you're a top five quarterback, there's going to be a lot of pressure to perform. Well, you don't cook a pie without, you know, getting your ingredients together and going through the process to make that pie the right way. And I don't believe that Blaine had that opportunity in Jacksonville. He wasn't allowed to be groomed the right way and to be brought up the right way. He was brought into chaos, and chaos became him when it came to going out on the field and finding a rhythm and finding his confidence. And, you know, and that affects a young guy. And I always felt bad about that for Blaine, because a lot of people on the outside had no idea about a lot of the things that he had to deal with that really did not help him at all. We're detriment to him as a player. But Trevor Lawrence is a different situation as well. He's coming into a situation where you've got an entirely infused fan base that's ready for a new era of football. He's had, obviously, an amazing college career. He's got amazing ability. He's got, a head coach that is highly revered amongst college and respected here on the NFL level as well, because you got to respect what he's done. And, you know, he's going to have his chances to fail. He's going to have his chances to learn from his failures without necessarily the critiquing and the pressure that comes along with it. When you're in a different situation, when there's jobs that are on the line and coaching staffs that are on the line and a team that, you know, is in flux. So I think that, you know, the scenario for him is a much better one. And I hope that Jacksonville is able to lay that foundation this season to build on, to become a consistent contender.
How are things going with the Observant Lineman, your YouTube channel?
Oh, man, it's going great, man. It's going great. I love jumping on. I do live streams every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. This week, I'm actually not doing my streams as scheduled just because I'm in the process of moving from one house to a new house. So just figuring out when I'll be able to get it done this week. But I generally, Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, I'm live and streaming in the evening. But it's good, man. I get a number of different players who I was teammates with who've come on to the live streams. Maurice Jones-Drew was my first guest, actually, on the on my stream. So shout out to Mojo.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun work. It's fun stuff to do. I really enjoy talking about sports. I really enjoy talking about, you know, football in particular, the culture of football. I think that's important to kind of give people that perspective. So make sure you go check out my channel and hit that subscribe button when you get there.
No doubt. Uche Wanari. Hey, I really enjoyed it, Uche. Best of luck. Continued success. And we'll talk again during the season.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
There he goes. Uche Wanari had a very good career here in Jacksonville. And 92 career starts, 104 games played. Very outspoken. Always has been. And appreciate his time as he goes into the night with Rick Bogle. All right, we have overshot the runway. Let's take a quick one.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I hope you enjoyed that, Uche Wanari. Always liked him. I'm a big fan of offensive linemen. Always have been a big fan of offensive linemen. You know, back in the heyday, that was where I went first. Baselli. Loved Ben Coleman. One of my all-time favorite Jaguars. You know, Wydell was always a great quote. Of course, Big Leon, who's part of us now here at 1010XL 92.5 FM. And, you know, you had, Brian DeMarco, and you had, I can't even think of the other right guard who came in. What was his name? Don't turn 50! I'm telling you, when you turn 50, Rich Tilske. Yes, Rich Tilske. It came to me. It just takes a little while to come to you. You know what I mean? But I always loved that offensive line, and I enjoyed it, you know, when Wanari was there, and Manawai was there, and Williams was there, and, you know, Meester was there. This offensive line just, they haven't really been too expressive, if that makes any sense. And, you know, they're kind of silent leaders, in my opinion. Maybe that'll change. We'll see. All right, Uche Wanari, not a big fan of the hire of Urban Meyer. And, you know, I found it refreshing that he is a Jag. He played here, and not everyone's on board. I have grown leaps and bounds, in my impression, with Urban Meyer, okay? And y'all know I'm a Florida State guy. I'm a Florida State guy. So obviously Urban wasn't my favorite man going back to his days at Florida. But he has absolutely turned me around by witnessing what he has been doing. And every time he has met with us, and again, keeping eyes on him, just how involved he is during practice. Only time will tell. Let me get this right now. This is a good one. It's from the 98-16. He believes that Walker Little should start right now. So every game that Walker does not start, is not even longer since he has played in a real game. I said back to him, I said, my point is he's not ready yet. He responds, he said, I'm just trying to understand how he will be more ready later this year by sitting on the bench and not going against the ones at practice. I would have him play a significant amount of time in all three preseason games and evaluate him then. That's assuming he looks like the real deal at practice. Daryl Bevel was asked today. Do we have that on Walker Little? Daryl Bevel was asked today about him, and he made no bones about it. He said he was going to get the best five players on the football field. Let's see. Yes, we do. Let's play. It's a brief one. Let's play number eight. This is a little bit earlier today. All right, RJ, I'll let you ring that up. on Walker Little. Here's my opinion on it, okay? You gave $14 million to Cam Robinson. So you don't put him on the bench. Money matters. And, you know, Cam's worn his shirt on backwards. He finally put it on the right way on Monday, or maybe it was the weekend. Again, all these days kind of run together. But when you give a guy that amount of money, you have to give him that opportunity. All right? Number two, and, yeah, I didn't ask Uche Nwaneri about it. I probably should, but it doesn't matter who you are. When I, including Brian Baldinger over the weekend, okay, I talk with a lot of offensive linemen. I firmly believe that playing offensive line is the most difficult thing to do in the NFL immediately, to come in and be a contributor, even a difference maker. That has always been my opinion. For a long period of time, I really felt that way, you know, about the college game. Crying out loud, Florida State redshirted Walter Jones, you know, a first ballot Hall of Famer. I've just always have thought that. So you take, on top of all of that, the fact that he has only played one game in 2 years, I think it's too much to put him out there immediately against Houston and say you are a day one starter. Now, I think through practice and whatever else it is, I think 6 or 7 games when perhaps, you know, the pressure has dimmed just a little bit. He learns much more about this offense. He learns much more about what he has to do. So remember, if he goes in, he's a true rookie being asked to protect the blind side of the face of this franchise, a rookie. And you know what? I know there was success last year in the NFL draft. I look at what, you know, Becton did in New York. I look at what Tristan Wirfs did last year in Tampa Bay. I look at what Jedrick Wills did last year in Cleveland. We'll see him a week from Saturday. But the difference there is those guys played a lot. They played the 2 seasons. They didn't take 2 years off, and I think there's going to be a little bit of rust. Now, if he just flat out earns it, if he flat out kicks the living snot out of people in practice, and I thought he had a good practice today, and he does it during games, then maybe he is able to force that change. Maybe he's so good that you can play him. I mean, what's the weakest link right now in this football team? On that offensive line, I think most people would say A.J. can. At right guard. Can you put him in right now at guard? Juwan Taylor is in year 3 of a 4-year deal. He has got to pick up his game if he wants to get paid. Again, I thought he had a good showing today, one-on-one against Josh Allen. I understand that it was not a good year for him, and I go crazy about those false starts. I've also said this. For me, someone who did not play the game, okay, outside of high school, learning the offensive line, understanding the offensive line is the most difficult part of football for me. And I think it should be for most of you out there. You think you have an idea of what you're supposed to do, but it's been very complex around here because it's a football team that has consistently been, you know, man-to-man blocking, but also zone blocking schemes. It's not like they do one and just one. They mix and match, sometimes in game. So there's a lot to learn, and there's a lot to understand, and that's why I lean on the people, you know, like Greg Huntington and whoever, offensive linemen out there who know this game better than I do when it comes to being in the ditch. And everyone I've ever spoken to says, man, it is so hard to it's so hard to come in and do what Pacelli did. Okay? It is. Anyway, let's hear from Daryl Bevel. Daryl Bevel today was asked about Walker Little.
I mean, we're competing out here every day, and we've told the guys we're putting the best 5 guys out there. So if Walker Little ends up being one of the best 5, then we got to find a way to get him in there. If Ben Barge finds, you know, is one of those guys, we'll find a way to get him in there. And I mean, that's the nature of this business. We got to have the best guys playing.
They got 9 they like, and you know, it's fun. It really is funny. You can make the case that the second best position group on this football team is the offensive line. You really can. I don't drive off the road. I don't want to be responsible for it. But if those five come into play, you got your tackles in Little at 6 and Richardson at 7. You've got Shatley, you know, kind of interchangeable there inside that can be a center for you and a guard for you. And you got Ben Bartsch, who, you know, the early look on him is that he has really improved as far as his strength. But, you know, I do think, yeah, let me take a break here. I do think that as early as 2022, you know, the plan would be Little at one of the two tackles and Ben Bartsch at right guard. I feel comfortable about that, but we'll see. I hope you understand. I hope I made some sense on that. If he had played 12 games last year and if he had played 12 games in 2019, I'd still feel this way, but I wouldn't be as set on it as I am now, the fact that he's only gone once in two games. I've talked with a lot of people who know football who really share this opinion. So I got to tell you that I have been advised with this, and that's why I feel this way. Again, if he goes out and earns it, all the power to him.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars made some transactions today. Taven Bryan now placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. Oh, boy. It's just one thing after another for him. I don't even know what to expect. Now, you look at him and you look at C.J. Henderson. Here's the difference. C.J. Henderson, Jag fans have got, I mean, and we're talking about two former first-round draft picks, all right? C.J. Henderson, in my opinion, is huge to be a part of this Jaguars turnaround. I think for Taven Bryan, it really doesn't matter. I feel as though he's lost. I mean, listen, if he got it together and turned it around, I mean, he's a first-rounder. I'm all for it. But, you know, really, what are the expectations there? He had an off-the-field incident where he was injured. It was an accident. And now he's got, you know, he's placing the COVID. And if the way the COVID thing has worked so far, for the most part, you've missed 10 practices. And we don't know, you know, we don't know the exact situation of the COVID. Do you have the COVID where you're missing at least 10 practices? Have you been in contact with someone who has the COVID? I don't know. We're never going to know unless the player himself tells us, because the team won't tell us, agents won't tell us, and, you know, that is well within their right, but it's getting worse for Taven Bryan. It was actually a nice day for C.J. Henderson because we were able to see him. He was out on the practice field, so that's encouraging. All right, 6 practices in. You got 7 tomorrow. I think they're going to be off Thursday. I don't know that, but I believe they are. And then, you know, that would be Friday 8, Saturday 9, the scrimmage Sunday on 10. So, you know, if things are moving full steam ahead for C.J. Henderson, he could be back with his football team in a practice by Monday. And let's hope that's the case. James O'Shaughnessy. Jared Wilson back today. That's good news. Jared Wilson's a real interesting guy because, seriously, I mean, he's got a lot of starts. He's a guy that they like, but this is a totally new coaching staff. Okay? You can really make the point that he'll be in there as a starter next to Rashawn Jenkins, or he's a guy who doesn't make the 53-man roster. I believe that Rudy Ford did a couple of nice things today. I believe he got flagged with a PI, but he was noticeable today. I think it was today, yesterday. No, it was Sidney Jones with the pickoff of Jake Luton. But Ford made a nice defensive play today. Daniel Thomas, in his second year, had a very good mini camp. He got torched today. They all got torched today by DJ Chark. Oh, my gosh, what an effort today. Some people think that Chark has been kind of like silent or, you know, hasn't been. He's fine. DJ Chark is absolutely fine. Okay? And himself, he is playing in a contract year. But, you know, all of a sudden that safety position is pretty deep. Josh Jones is a guy that played well early in the year and then kind of it got away from him. Of course, I, you know, was bragging a little bit earlier about what I've seen with Andre Sisco. So when you look at that safety situation, who knows what's going to happen? You know, Andrew Wingard, in my opinion, would be certainly one of the guys out because he can't cover. But there's such an, you know, Urban Meyer puts so much into special forces, not special teams, but special forces. And maybe he's the guy who hangs around because of that. I don't see it. But anyway, Jared Wilson brought back today. Chris Claybrooks brought back today, both in reserve COVID-19. Chris Claybrooks, I don't think, makes the team, especially if C.J. Henderson is healthy. I do not see it right now. I think practice squad, absolutely. But when you look at, hopefully, the return of Henderson with Shaq Griffin, a really good day today for Tyson Campbell. Again, Sidney Jones has done some nice things. Had a pick yesterday from Jake Luton. There's four. Obviously, inside on the slot, you got Trey Herndon. That's five. Who is your sixth corner going to be? Is it Chris Claybrooks? You know, is it the undrafted rookie DJ. How about outside and smoke myself a J? It's Paul Simon solo when he left Simon and Garfunkel.
Classic.
It was, yes. After, no, that's not after a minute. Was it? And I blew that, what the hell's the name of that song? And we'll play it on the other side. I just got to think of it. I went outside, smoked myself a J. What is that, Paul Simon? It was late in the evening by Paul Simon. There you go. I just had to kind of sing with it a little bit, RJ. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you just had to hum it.
Yeah. Luke Barku. I just said a couple of nice things in practice, believe it or not. Jameson Houston, for one, is a guy that's caught my eye. The other one I was going to mention was Russell Chappell. Or check that, Chappell Russell. Again, if he makes a couple more plays, I'll get the name right. He got schooled today on one-on-one by Tebow, but he actually did a couple of things that I liked a little bit. So, I don't know. It could happen for Chris Claybrooks. We shall see. James O'Shaughnessy, you know, came out today in pads, but he's off to the side for the most part, rehabbing that ankle. So that is the latest there today as far as injuries and what is going on with the team. Dabo Swinney was in attendance today for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Dave Campo, who I know does a podcast here with Joe Cowart, was at camp today. And as he was leaving and I was talking to him, he said to me, if I had Trevor Lawrence as my quarterback, I would still be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And I remember there was a radio coming from the room next door. And my mother laughed the way some ladies do. When it's late in the evening and the music seeping through.
Ah, they just don't make lyrics like this anymore. True lyricists. Part of the songwriter singing era. Songwriter singer era, excuse me. We got one more verse here, baby. Then we're going to go outside and smoke a J. You ready? Then I learned to play some lead guitar. I was underage in this funky bar, and I stepped outside to smoke myself a J.
Then I learned to play some lead guitar. I was underage in this funky bar, and I stepped outside to smoke myself a J.
Guitar! All right, Paul Simon. And when I come back to the, you know what I love about Paul Simon? I could dunk on him.
He was short?
Yes.
Ooh.
I could have. I was watching a Woody Allen movie. It was late in the evening. Okay, no pun intended. Woody Allen's just a. I don't know what word I'm looking for.
Interesting fellow.
How about atrocious? Okay, this is nothing I like about Woody Allen. But I don't know why I was watching his movie. He had some good characters in it, some good actors, and well, Paul Simon was in it. I forget who the woman was in that movie. Might have been like an Annette Bening or something like that. Paul Simon's like 5'1". And here's what I would do. If you got me the ball, because you're like magic, all right? It was Annie Hall. Okay, only one of his most popular movies. You're like Scotty Barnes. If you got the ball down low to me, the first thing I would do to Paul Simon is turn around with both hands, two-handed monster dunk flush right over Paul Simon.
Now, are we talking about like that Shaq dunk over Dudley was his last name? I forget what his...
What, Chris Dudley?
Chris Dudley. We're talking about that?
Right, right. Yeah, yes, that's what I would do. Next thing I would do, you throw it into me, I would give him a left-handed edition of a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar skyhook. Okay. Then you go inside to me, and I play the role of Kevin McHale, a guy who didn't have to bend over to tie his shoes. That's how long his arms were. I do a little fake once to the right, turn around to the left, use glass, bam, right at Paul Simon.
Tim Duncan.
There you go. There you go. Appreciate that. All right. We're out of here. Philip Rivers was contacted today by Sam Farmer, very talented writer in Los Angeles, longtime writer for the LA Times, and he now says that Philip Rivers has not ruled out coming back to the NFL late in the year. If you do not know, Rivers now is currently the head coach at St. Michael Catholic High School in Alabama. So, you know, the Colts are dealing with it with Carson Wentz. He's going to be out 5 to 12 weeks. Also, their best offensive lineman and one of the best guards in all of football is out, if you look at the injury that came in today to Quentin Nelson. So, Matt Stafford, speaking of L.A., Matt Stafford got a good break because he hit a helmet throwing the football today, and, you know, the x-rays were negative. But you're already down one starter. You could have been down a second starter. And injuries are part of the game. All right, we're about out of here. Carmelo Anthony to your team. Carmelo Anthony, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Russell West. How many Hall of Famers on that team?
How many ice baths are these guys going to have to take?
All right, he is RJ Saunders. He is our producer. Thank you today for all your, tonight I should say, for all of your questions. I tried to answer just about as many as I could. Tomorrow night, we're on 7 to 9. Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra, 6 to 8 on Thursday. Monty's in Avondale, a Miller Lite party, 6 to 8 on Friday. Thank you to Uche Wanari for joining us as well. Folks, my name is Rick Ballew. We will talk tomorrow night after Poker Room Radio.